Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello to each and every one of you out there on the internet. My name is Dan Selke, his name is Dan Roman, and together we are two guys named Dan who get together once, sometimes twice, a week to talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, dragons, swords, horses, robots, office workers who have had their personalities severed from their waking life at the extent that they have to live out their lives at work, not knowing what their other selves do, and other things like that. Daniel, nice. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm loving, that intro, making me think we're going to be talking about a certain show that I enjoyed that you've been watching, that may have even gotten, I think, a trailer for its second season today that we'll have to mention. But aside from that, I'm good. I'm still reeling from dragons dancing, and that dancing looks shockingly like murder. Good. I'm high on the House of the Dragon at the moment. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat?
Yeah. Hey, Nicole. Hey, Cannibal the Dragon. Great screen name. Love that. Martha,
nice,
Julie.
Good name.
Good to have you. Here's with comments, questions. We love chatting with you and answering you. I'm feeling good. I'm still on the high of that, too. I thought we would take this week, this show, this Wednesday show, because we're here every Wednesday and every Sunday through the end of House of the Dragon season, to kind of assess how the second season of House of the Dragon is doing now that we're at the halfway point. This is a shorter season, only four episodes as opposed to, only eight episodes as opposed to 10 last year. So we are at the halfway point. We're four deep, four to go. And I guess I just wanted to ask you and ask everyone out there watching, what do you think of it so far? And do you think it's improving or a step down from the first season? Daniel, have any thoughts?
I mean, I think this season has been fantastic so far. I really don't have many complaints. I think the slower pacing has not bothered me as much as it's bothered some other people, because I love a good intentionally paced, weighty piece of media. And I think House of the Dragon is that, even more than Game of Thrones. I was talking to my stepbrother, and he kind of brought up there's not a lot of sword fighting in this show. And that's kind of true. Like, people really aren't duking it out very much until the dragons do. And then it's terrifying. So I've been enjoying it a lot. I think in terms of how it stacks up to season one, I actually rewatched some of season one recently.
Nice.
And I think
thorough.
Yeah. It was crazy to rewatch, you know, the premiere of season one with like younger Viserys and Otto and Daemon, and they're all in the same room talking about Corlys Velaryon. That was a trip. So I think on the one hand, I'm going to give you my cowardly answer and then my less cowardly answer. My cowardly answer is that season one was a very different type of show because of the time jumps, because of
accurate.
The sort of story it was telling. It was really setting up this generational conflict. Season two is the war's on, or we're going to talk about the war maybe getting on, and now it's on. So that aside, my less cowardly answer is yes, I think it is better than season one. I think rewatching season one really drove that home for me to see new episodes and then old episodes at the same time, and really see how much more magic they've captured. Not to say there wasn't plenty of magic in season one, and, you know, with young Rhaenyra and young Alicent and all of that. But I really do feel like the show was finding itself in its first season, and now it's here. Now it knows what it's doing, what it is, and it's just a more confident, better lit production. So now that I've rambled, what are your thoughts on that, Dan? Do you think it's better than season one?
It is definitely better lit. You're right there. Some folks seem to agree it's better. Bushmaster thinks it's better. Julie Days is loving this season, thinks it's better than season one. I'm enjoying it too. You're right. It's a different animal. So I was at a barbecue over the 4th of July weekend, and I was talking to like a complete someone I hadn't met before, like a family member of a family member of like an in-law. And it was brought up that my job is like watching TV and watching House of the Dragon. And even this guy who I'd never met before was like, and they were like, what's the next episode like? I have other relatives who are really into it and were like, I can't believe we get the screeners early. What's going to happen? And I said, honestly, this next one, The Red Dragon and the Gold, the one where all the dragons go down, is crazy. Really, really great. Lots of action. And the one guy I didn't know said, oh, is there finally going to be some action? Like, I think probably there was a bit of a pacing flag in the first three. I don't feel like the show moved as fleetly. I'm glad so many commenters think it's better. Although I will say, the fourth episode this recent one did a lot to turn it around. During those first three episodes, I felt like I was being teased and edged a little bit when Rhaenyra and Rhaenys would keep saying, we must do everything we can to avoid having an all-out war. And I guess I felt like I was being a bit preached to about the horrors that a dragon-on-dragon war would unleash. But I will say, the fourth season did a lot of good to sort of put that all in context. Because when it actually came, it was horrible. And I'm like, oh, that's what they were talking about. That might be a flaw, because I feel like I should feel what they're saying rather than wanting to get to something that's more entertaining. But I do feel like it was borne out. And giving it a bunch of credit, I can say, okay, maybe that was their plan all along. Maybe they were trying to sort of lull you a bit and produce some frustration, put you in Aegon's shoes of wanting to go to war and not really understanding what it meant, and then to show you what it actually means and for you to be horrified by it. I think that's the charitable interpretation. So I think overall it's been good. It is different, though. It's hard to compare them. I asked the question, but I don't think we can know whether it's better than season one yet, because it isn't finished. That's my cowardly answer.
Nice. I like that one. I think the pacing thing is so fascinating to me, because season one had time jumps, but like there was a lot less action than, like, we got the crab feeder, I guess, by this point. But season one was not action scenes left and right. Like, it was paced even slower than this one. It's just that the conflicts were different, so you didn't notice. Do you disagree with that?
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
I do, because only if you think of action as like physical action, like Rhaenyra getting crowned the heir, it was a big emotional scene that hit hard. Like Rhaenyra going into King's Landing with her uncle and being taken to a brothel where his uncle almost seduced her. That was edge of my seat TV, as far as I was concerned. Like, Allison walking into the ballroom with her green gown, I was like, oh, she's going to go down. Action is definitely wider than just physical fighting. So, and I don't think there was even much of that. I will say, a big flaw, I think they botched the blood and cheese scene. And I think after consideration, I think I know why now. I can share it in an article later. I think that was just poorly done. I know that you've written an article about it, about how they kind of wrote this into a corner. And some great comments. Yeah. We'll definitely get to you guys. I think it was a directing... Okay, here's my quick... I'll try to be quick about it. The blood and cheese scene. All I know is when I watched it, everyone's looking forward to it. These two assassins creep into the Red Keep and kill Helaena Targaryen and King Aegon's young son in front of his mother, Helaena. Gonna be horrifying, gonna be awful. I watched it and felt pretty much nothing. And, which is bad. Like, I should have felt something. Like, I don't care if they change things from the book. It's a mother in the same room that her son's getting decapitated in. I don't care if Alicent wasn't there. You should be able to do something with that.
Definitely.
I think it came down to directing. I think we needed to be in Helaena's shoes when Blood and Cheese came upon her. I think we were in Blood and Cheese's shoes for the entire lead up, which I thought was cool. We watched them walk through the castle, walk through the throne room. That was all fun. But I think it was a mistake not to, at some point, cut away from them and just be with Helaena and just have her, I don't know, say goodnight to her mom or tuck her kids into bed. Like, just hang out with her for a bit. So we're in her shoes when she is come upon. So we're in her POV rather than in Blood and Cheese's POV when they come upon this woman we don't know very well. So that, I am now convinced, would have gone a long way toward fixing things. So I blame director Alan Taylor. But I also credit director Alan Taylor.
But that's not a director
delivering. Are you sure? Sometimes these interviews, they will go ahead and... sometimes interviews, like in Miguel Sapochnik, he'll say, like, we put together the bit where Jon Snow gets trampled in the Battle of the Bastards, something like that. I think it probably is a bit of shading. I also wonder if these things being filmed during the writer's strike made a difference. Because I think they're more hemmed in. They aren't allowed to improvise much on the fly with kind of new ideas. But that is mostly what I think of Blood and Cheese now that I've had some time to mull it.
Fair. I agree with the overall premise of what you're saying, sticking so hard to Blood and Cheese, I don't know that that was necessarily a good choice. And it, during basically Helaena's biggest scene of the season, of this leg of the Dance of the Dragons, like, the one part she's really at the center of, they really kind of decentered her. And I don't love that, especially because Fia Sabin, who plays Helaena, is doing a really excellent job this season. Yeah. And I think a lot of the stuff they're giving her around Blood and Cheese or since Blood and Cheese has been really good. And even more interesting than the book, I would say, in some ways, because her grief is a little more two-dimensional in the book. This happens, she snaps. She can't even look at her children anymore type thing. And there's a little bit more three dimensionality to the fourth of her grief in the show, I think. And I know we've kind of debated that a little bit. I think
I wish we'd spend more time with her.
Me too. Totally agree with that. I think, you know, with Blood and Cheese, one part for me that's, I think we will hear more about this, was Ryan Condal made it kind of a, just an off-the-cuff comment about the child Maul and how there are some things that even HBO would look at. And granted, we didn't need to see the child murder on screen, but the torture, the emotional mental torture of Blood and Cheese is so horrific. He kind of alluded to there being like limitations on what you can even really shoot with child actors, both in terms of the amount of hours of the day they can work, as well as what you can actually do with them before it's like, hey, don't traumatize literal children for a TV show. And George R. R. Martin talked about this recently on his blog, where he basically said there's a lot more to be said about Blood and Cheese and Maelor the Missing, because It's so funny to me. Like, he always used this this metaphor talking about adaptations of how many children does Scarlett O'Hara have, which is a Gone with the Wind reference, because in the book Gone with the Wind, she has, I think, 3. In the movie, she has 2. Different number of kids. And his point was, you know, she has 3 in the one and 2 in the other. Like, that's how many kids she has. It just depends on the version of the story that you're watching. And that is exactly the case with Helena. You know, Maelor missing changes a lot of things. But his comment about that, like, just that there's more to be said about blood and cheese, did make me think of the production side of things. Like, I wonder what the feedback from HBO was about that very horrifying scene, like, as it was written in the book, not as it was filmed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that in general was probably this season's biggest misstep so far. But on the whole, like, I don't know. I thought the Cargill twin stuff was really good. I know you said you wished it had more setup, but I did enjoy the way they pulled it off.
I did too. I thought it was as good as it possibly could be given the setup.
I agree with that. Yeah.
My favorite part has been Aegon. Straight through, something about him is so dynamic, and he's always in flux, and he's always in conflict with himself and those around him. He's really compelling in a way that I don't really find the other characters as. I kind of I think I would comment here, a good comment from Sueda. I don't else agree with Sueda Mahanta. Aside from blood and cheese, the rest has been good. I agree. Tom Glencarney, Aegon, bringing it. You and Mitchell are rocking. Completely agree. The Daemon arc has become boring. I agree with that too. And yeah, it was overall, it's good.
Yeah.
I think after walking all this, I'm going to say, I also agree with Malik, who thought that Allison's previous motivation for being scared for her family's safety, for wanting to prevent Rhaenyra, is better than her just basing it on Viserys's deathbed rambling. I agree with that as well. Yeah. Sometimes, and then it all comes together wonderfully in that dragon episode. That was fantastic. And it sort of justified Alicent and Rhaenyra's sister act scene where they kind of met, which stretched things a little bit, but I thought it worked, especially in light of the fact
good
that
scene,
the horror,
ridiculous setup.
I mean, yeah, I bought it because the horror really was that bad. Like, I see why you wanted to do that. I feel like sometimes the writers are taking of like several options of how a character could be treated, like the less interesting. I think Daemon's kind of being given weird kid gloves and not as dynamic as he used to be. I don't like that. Aegon's been wonderful. Aemon's been great. Allison and Rhaenyra, I'm on board for. So good season. I'm going to go ahead and say I don't think it's good as season one, though.
Ooh. Okay, fair. We can't say for sure till it's all out. I think looking at the first half of season one to the first half of this season, season one has an extra episode, of course, so it has an advantage there, but
two extra.
It probably told, two extra total, one extra in the first halves. So it's the first 5 versus four. And maybe season one's first half told a more complete story than season two's. Maybe a bit more happens. I think that's true. I just think there's so many elements to the production that I think are better in season two. And someone mentioned that they think part of the reason people are complaining about the pacing in season two is because every scene is so dense, whereas season one there were more lighter scenes. And then there was a bigger contrast between lighter scenes and then really dark stuff happening,
which is really good for drama,
which is really good. There's not really a Tyrion Lannister jokester. The closest thing we've had is Aegon. And now obviously that is pretty much gone. Like, I think it's safe to say Aegon will not be the same character whenever he recovers from what he went through. But I do think that there is something to the idea that season two is cramming so many little details into every single scene and every single bit of dialogue, almost more than season one. And I do wonder if that is, I don't want to say too much for people, but if it's, if it does add to that feeling of this is really dragging on, which I don't know, man. Like, this was our biggest, this was a, the biggest complaint we all had about Game of Thrones season 8 was they rushed it. And now we're complaining they're not going fast enough. We are fickle viewers.
No, we're not. I don't like the idea that, like, because, like, I wonder if people can't handle the density. I'm not saying you're saying it's kind of smacks of like,
yeah,
people just aren't smart enough to get it. Like, no, I get it. I'm bored sometimes. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
The problem with the blood and cheese scene isn't that it's too dense.
Is that that's different.
Impact. Like the problem.
Yeah,
with,
that's different.
You know, some other scenes that just sort of lie there. Isn't that they're too dense? Is that there isn't enough moment? Like the Daemon. Okay, Daemon stuff is good. So it's a war. It's a war on. We want movement and we want momentum. The exciting things.
Yeah.
Movement creates energy. So I liked the scene where Kristen. I've enjoyed Kristen Cole soon, by the way. I've liked him and Mysterio. Those two.
He's had a good season. Yeah.
Mysterio too. So when Kristen Cole leaves King's Landing, the third episode with an army at his back, I was like, this feels good. This feels like things are moving. Yeah. Forward, even if I don't love Kristen Cole, though I am kind of enjoying it this time. It feels good that moves are being made. When the rat catchers are hanged, it feels like moves are being made.
Yeah.
Whereas the Daemon plot, I won't spoil things for what happens in the future, but there's been a lot of like, he gets there and he tries to do something and it doesn't work and he just kind of stays still. Like he goes there and he expects a fight and there's no fight. Which is kind of funny. I didn't hate that scene. He meets with a guy and he wants to raise an army, but the guy can't help him. He meets with, and I'll just leave it there. But there's this seeming like halting of momentum in some of this stuff. And I just say anything to do with the scenes being too dense. I think it has to do with them not moving forward in a way that is entertaining or that is kind of satisfying. Especially with a war on. Those scenes are easier to get away with too when it's like a more easy time. You're supposed to be literally at war.
That's true.
Excitement.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a fair point, that it's easier to get away with those types of scenes. And I don't want it to come off like I was saying, like, viewers aren't smart enough. Like, that's not so much as what I mean. Welfare. Let me clarify then. I mean more like the amount of information coming at you can be so much. That it makes the episodes feel longer, and they are longer in this season anyway. So it's a little bit of all of that. But I do agree with you about, and whoever pointed out Bushmaster, Corlys Velaryon building ships for the whole first half of the season. You know, Daemon at Harrenhal, he's been there for a couple of episodes now. And I think it's almost similar to Blood and Cheese, where I feel like there are some places where the show has written itself into corners and it's in kind of a holding pattern before characters are allowed to do the things that they eventually need to do. Like Rhaenyra is kind of in this situation as well, where like they have given her a few things that were Jace's in the book because they didn't, it seems to me like they just didn't really know what to do with Rhaenyra for some parts of this first half of the season. Like the decision to send Viserys and Aegon, Rhaenyra's youngest kids, and Joffrey away. If I recall correctly, Jace makes that decision in the book.
Yeah.
So there are things like that where they need material for Rhaenyra. So they're kind of repurposing stuff. They're coming up with the Sister Act scheme to get her, which I totally get. But I think Daemon is interesting. You know, we were talking about this earlier, that it's almost like a defanged version of Daemon, because in the book, as soon as the war starts, Daemon immediately starts displaying why he is the most competent battle commander House Targaryen has by sweeping the Riverlands, essentially building an army and causing all sorts of havoc. Like he and the Blackwoods respond like immediately to the Battle of the Burning Vale. He's already out and about doing stuff. He really just like stops at Harrenhal and then continues on his way. So this is one of those instances where it almost feels like the comparison I used was like The Witcher season 2 with Kaer Morhen, where they had this really iconic set that they built And then they're finding ways to just keep characters there, to keep using it, even though that's not actually what the story demands. And I am enjoying a lot of the Harrenhal stuff, but it is fair that it's slowing things down, like, and taking our most volatile, interesting, or someone who was one of our most volatile, interesting characters, and largely just, you know, Ebenezer Scrooging him for like multiple episodes in a row, giving him like ghosts of Christmas past and future and whatever. So I think there are fair criticisms to be made. I just, you know, the pacing in particular is one of those things where I'm just like getting flashbacks to Throne season 8. And I'm like, I really hope that the showrunners of this show are not listening too closely to these complaints, because I would hate for them to swing too far the other way. You know what I mean?
No, I think you should be able, if you're a good dramatist, choose the right pace. You guys are giving great comments. Let's talk through the comments. Nick, I see you. Don't worry that you feel like a lot of the other book reading channels and the damn stuff is the best stuff. That's great. But I respectfully disagree with those channels.
I can understand why. I can understand why they might say that. Well, just because of all the little details in the Daemon visions. Like I saw someone point out that like he walks past three dogs in Harrenhal in one of his visions in episode 4, and like the sigil for House Clegane is three dogs. So there are all of those sorts of like little tiny, really deep cut Easter eggs that they are working in through Daemon. Like the Weirwood paste is another one. That's probably what he's eating is weirwood paste from Alice Rivers.
That's nice, but like, what do Easter eggs about? Entertain me! I don't care if they're little Easter eggs or little like fun references. What does it matter if it's not fun to watch?
Well, Lady Stoneheart shouldn't have been cut, Dan. I think that the fantastical elements and the surreal elements of Thrones are fun to watch, just not everyone enjoys them the same. And I think that depends on your how much of the fantasy you want in this, or just personal taste. But I can understand that. But I also get why you don't.
Okay, we'll end it. But like, if Damon were having weird dreams and sleeping on weirwood beds and eating paste, but also going out there building an army, I wouldn't be having these complaints. It's not the fantasy things I object to. It's the
that's fair.
It's the slackened pacing of that particular plot line. But okay, we should probably move on.
Totally fair.
Okay, woo. I do agree with Victor. The show is betting 1,000 in casting. The casting is always wonderful. Malik asked a question I already have the answer to. Do you think the show will address Renee's little masker in the future, and now that she is dead? I kind of doubt it. And no. Yeah, I was inconsistent.
No,
that's the basement the show has made. Ooh. Bushmaster is against mentioning Aegon's dream, knowing the horse is innate. I thought the scene last episode, I liked everything about this episode, where Rhaenyra talked to Jace about Aegon's dream was really, really effective. I thought that was very, very good. So,
yeah.
As long as you can make something interesting, there are no limits. I have no problem with fantasy stuff as long as it's interesting. I just don't find this particularly terribly interesting. Chris thinks the Black and Green Council meetings are boring. Some yes, some no. I mean, like, I thought the one where Aegon couldn't speak Valyrian was great. That was a really great moment where they kind of had a character bit in it. I've liked a bunch of them. They're important. I don't want small council meetings. I mean, it's like anything else. If they're good, they're good. And if they're not, they're not. Should we move on or do you have more to say?
Totally.
We do have a couple things to talk about.
Yeah, I agree with you about the council meetings. I've seen a lot of people complaining about them, and I've enjoyed them too. But I do think that one you just mentioned is the best one, obviously. Aemond calling out Aegon. And I do think those meetings are their best when a character moment like that happens in them. And we have had a few that didn't have too much of that, like but the ones where they do, I think still have the magic. But yeah, we can move on. Final verdict, House of the Dragon season 2. Verdict's out. Jury's out. Good. We'll see if it's better than season 1.
My jury's never out. It is good. It is good TV. And I'm a little worried about where it's going overall. We'll talk about it more next week or on Sunday where we're here after the episode to break it down all in detail. And Wednesday at 2 p.m. talk about things in more general. Really quickly, let's go to a couple other bits and news, both Game of Thrones and otherwise. George R.R. Martin, author of A Song of Ice and Fire, creator of Game of Thrones, and writer of Fire and Blood, the book upon which House of Darkness is based, is up to his old tricks, writing blog posts, saying some fun stuff, talking about he's up to his old tricks, writing blog posts. we can't too much time, but I mean, he is fascinating. Yeah. He's so fascinating because he is this hugely famous figure who seems to have never understood that at his level of fame, every single thing he says becomes newsworthy by virtue of the fact that he said it. So he still kind of just says stuff and people draw their implications. And I don't think it's unreasonable to expect them to. Anyway, he talked about he's going to the UK, visiting his publishers at HarperCollins, and just cautioning people that doesn't mean that Winds of Winter is done. I visit publishers whenever I travel. It's just something you should do in the publishing industry. When it's done, I'll tell you. So that's kind of a non-update there. He also said that he's going to visit the Night of the Seven Kingdoms set. He's going to meet with the writer and director of the Game of Thrones play called The Iron Throne that's coming along well, about the tourney at Harrenhal, which could be out as early as 2025. Although when George R. R. Martin sets a date, I would maybe not trust it completely. So I don't know about that one.
Well, yeah, that's fair. I mean, it wouldn't be on him, that one, but also I'll care about the play more when it's actually out and when it's somewhere other than London, because I'm not going to be able to go to London to watch that play anytime too soon. But it is cool to hear that it's happening. This is one of those Thrones projects that has been in the works for so long that I almost forget it even exists until, you know, something like this, where he mentions they're making a play about the tourney at Harrenhal, which, like, it is interesting to me because Martin has said he would never write the story of Robert's Rebellion. Like, he would never do a Robert's Rebellion book because by the time A Song of Ice and Fire is over, knocking on wood, off screen, all of the biggest secrets from Robert's Rebellion would have been revealed anyway, which we kind of saw in Thrones. You know, he's talking about Rhaegar and Lyanna, all of that. So that's fair. But the decision to dramatize it as a play, and this is just the tourney, so it's kind of like the inciting incident for the rebellion, where Rhaegar tries to have this huge tournament really as like a front to talk to a bunch of lords who are concerned that Aerys Targaryen is going mad. And then Aerys goes anyway, and Rhaegar proclaims Lyanna Stark the, you know,
queen of
vision
love
of love and beauty. Yeah, instead of his wife Ilya Martell, and Lyanna's already engaged to Robert Baratheon. It's a whole hot mess. It would be really interesting to see a play of that with all the pageantry and stuff. Yeah. So
I'm not gonna travel to London to see it, but I'd see it. And if they want to invite me to travel to London and give it a glowing review, I'll do it. If you pay for my airfare and my hotel, I don't care if I hate it. I'll give it a great review. So just note that.
Journalistic integrity. What's that?
I don't have any of that. Just give me money. Julie Davis is hilarious. I'll be the ghost of Australia when the Winds of Winter comes out. Julie, you are a funny person. And Victor, he's been stalling so long, he's the last surviving blogger. Also funny. You guys are funny. I like funny. Victor's also looking forward to the War with Rohirrim. I think believe that's out in December, later this year. Really briefly, I don't think we should talk about this in depth because it would take forever. But the other part of the blog post that was really funny was him talking about how he tried to get a spot at Worldcon, this World Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention that's going to happen in Glasgow, I think in August. August? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he August kept, 8th like, to the 12th.
Trying to get a hold of the person in charge of it, and they just kept ghosting him. Which is like, who ghosts George R. R. Martin? If you're organizing a fantasy convention, don't you want this person here? But he did host like back in 2020, and he had a bunch of backlash for his incredibly verbose, somewhat problematic hosting style. And then last year, the Hugo Awards had a controversy involving things mysteriously left on the ballot. So maybe they're just not looking to a controversy, or they just don't have anybody in charge and they have an AI running the place. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that was interesting to see. You know, he kind of said he tried calling them. He wrote to them trying to get a phone number to speak to someone, and they kept sending him to like a generic online form, which like So I'm going to this Worldcon. So I've been seeing all of their like internal communications and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's volunteer run Worldcons. There's no like Worldcon committee that runs it every year. It's new volunteers in different places and stuff like that. So I could fully imagine them not wanting to be like making exceptions for how they're, you know, because that's where they told everyone to go. If you want to be on the program, go to our online form and fill it out. But it is kind of crazy to imagine like George R. R. Martin, who like he's an elderly guy also. So there's like the one hand, he's insanely famous. The other hand, he's also like probably not, he's going to have less patience than someone our age for like going through the, you know, the online generic form of tell us exactly who you are and why you would like to participate and what your credentials are and all
and
that.
And we'll evaluate you. Yeah. Can you imagine?
And we'll evaluate. Yeah. So it is, it's, you know, you made a comment, you wrote about this today, and you said at this point, it's almost like the Hugo's Worldcon is almost known more for its controversial stuff first and sci-fi and fantasy second. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, but the past, you know, decade, probably there have been enough controversies that it's also mildly fair statement, I think.
To an outsider. So, yeah. That's whenever I hear about Worldcon or the Hugo Awards, it's, I only hear about the scandals. Like that's what I get.
Yeah.
So that's the impression that I have. And someone doesn't follow it kind of from the inside. Yeah. But I hope it goes well. And George Martin will be there, just like he on will. The floor, standing in line for autographs. So that'll be cool. We are a bit backed up here. We just love talking. Really quickly, I keep saying that. Whatever. Maybe it'll be true. I want to talk about really the Rings of Power, which is the second season of that Lord of the Rings prequel
show.
That show's
coming out too.
Yeah, I think around the time of Worldcon, late August. So they're really ramping up press for it. There is a lot of talk. There's like a lot of interviews. The directors and the showrunners and the actors are all saying like, it's going to be tons of battles. Sauron's going to be a much bigger deal this time. We have 120 physical sets, which is very impressive. And then I went and looked at like all the official trailers that are kind of spread everywhere, like the official one on the Amazon channel, on the Amazon Mirror channels for like New Zealand and Australia. Hey, Julie. The like IGN mirror of the trailer. And I can't help but notice, even like the behind the scenes, how we made season two, I can't help but notice that like the dislikes on those trailers are so wildly high and above the likes, and that most of the comments are making fun of the idea that Sauron is going to fool all the elves by putting on a new wig, even though he already betrayed them in the first season. I guess my question is this show doomed to have an audience mostly of hate watchers, or are there people out there who are really looking forward to it?
God, that's a fair question. I think there are plenty of people who are genuinely looking forward to it and who did enjoy season one. I was not one of them. There are things I liked about season one, but I think on the whole, I was more frustrated than in love with what I saw. And, you know, hearing you talk about the physical sets and all stuff like that makes me a little nervous because, you know, the first season looked gorgeous. The problem wasn't that it looked bad. It wasn't that anything on screen looked terrible or anything like that. It's just that the writing didn't back up what we were seeing well enough for it to work super well. Sauron he's too wounded to travel. And then they put him on a horseback and make him ride 3 days like without sleeping. And it's like, I guess he wasn't that wounded. It is interesting, though. I think there's an outsized number of hate watchers for this. And I think that's the nature of some of these very large, almost insular fandoms. And I'm thinking specifically of Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, which, you know, are kind of renowned for their toxic fan segments. So, you know, the thing about it having more dislikes than likes does not surprise me whatsoever. But it also doesn't really feel indicative of anything.
These
people haven't seen it. They're just basically, you know, upset on premise that it exists and want to rag on it. The wig thing is
I did
fair,
like.
Though. How is he going to fool those elves? We don't know.
I did like that all the comments, they weren't like outwardly mean or vitriolic. They were mostly cracking jokes about the wig, which I guess if you're going to hate watch the show, that's the way to do it.
Not bad.
I agree. It depends when it comes out. Listen, if the season is great, people are fickle, especially on the internet. All will be forgiven.
It's true.
I just wonder if it can build enough of an audience to kind of, I don't know, really go the distance as a show after it's gained an early reputation for being a bit meh. But we'll see when it comes out in late August. In terms of other stuff we're watching, you watch anything, Dan? You reading anything? And you out there, are you watching, reading, or, I don't know, driving anything new?
Yeah, I'll start with the things I'm reading first, because I have been reading stuff. I have been watching stuff. It's been great. Aside from House of the Dragon, which has been consuming most of my waking hours.
Sure.
I finished this book, Mirrored Heavens, which is the third of Rebecca Roanhorse's Between Earth and Sky books that started with Black Sun. It was really, really, really good. Mesoamerican inspired fantasy. I have enjoyed that trilogy. The trilogy's finished. It's like top tier. It's really good fantasy, honestly. It's better than a lot of books that are coming out at the moment. And if you've been looking for fantasy, but like a little different, fantasy with trappings reminiscent of the Maya and the Aztec and a lot of those cool little cultural touchstones. This is like Rebecca Roanhorse is like at the top of her game in this series. So I've been really enjoyed that. Hoping to write about it sometime soon, but that book was great.
Absolutely. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I feel like you would like the characters are very, very, very good. She does some interesting things with gender too, because it just treats the fact that there's a third gender in this series like totally normal. No one thinks anything of it. Like they have a different pronoun for it that's specific to the world. And I think she incorporated those elements much better than a lot of books I've read. I think she did a really fantastic job with it.
Nice.
But the other thing that I'm about to start reading this week that I'm very excited about is The Mercy of Gods.
Nice.
So this is the new James S. A. Corey, the authors of The Expanse. They are launching this new series. This is the first book. It comes out on August 6th. I'm really excited to see what they do with this one. There's a hive mind alien culture that captures other species from around the galaxy and then makes them work for them and compete in this brutal Colosseum type game to be their best servants, and so they can go to war with some other alien culture. It sounds really interesting and way weirder than The Expanse, so I'm really excited to dig into that.
That's cool.
So
their rep precedes them.
Yes, it does. So on the book front, things have been fantastic. In terms of shows, the only other one I've been watching, aside from The Boys, which is great, but it comes out like a week before our show, so I always forget that The Boys is fresh in my mind by the time our next podcast happens. I've been really enjoying The Boys, but one that is very fresh because it came out last night is The Acolytes, which remains just okay, I think. Did you watch the most recent one?
I did. I'm keeping up. I mean, I'm in now. I'll finish up. It kind of had a House of the Dragony moment where, like, which is what I call it when, like, a really important plot or story turn comes down to a whoops-a-daisy, where the one guy kind of stabs the dark side mother witch woman as she starts turning into mist. And, like, that's the mother of the twins. And that's going to be why the one hates them. But, like, he did it because she looked like she was doing something bad. And she's like, I was going to let her go with you. And it's like, whoops.
But was that why you were turning to mist right then? You know?
What? Yeah. Like
she said that, but it's also like, were you turning to mist to let her go? Cause that was not very clear. You probably should have warned someone.
Or infect Tommen's head or something. I don't know why writers I don't know why writers think this is satisfying, that like these big turns come down to like little mistakes. I don't know. It's just like if you're writing a human drama, don't you want your characters to make like decisions based on information? And they make the decisions because they are the people they are, and they choose to do something either good or bad that they either come to be proud of or regret. Like, I'm kind of getting tired of these stuff where it's like this hugely important, turn of the character's life is like, oops, I didn't understand what was happening, and now it's there for the rest of my life. Like, I'm just, it's gonna be a new rule for me. Like, dramatists, stop doing this. Like, yeah, make your characters accountable for their decisions. It's really getting annoying.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I can understand the impulse to do that. You know, that kind of age-old thing of like, if only everyone communicated clearly, would we still have these issues? Which, like, I think Natalie said this about the third House of the Dragon episode in our recap stream, that she liked that Rhaenyra got to say to Allison, you know, you misinterpreted this prophecy, because it took that element away of, if only they could have talked, it would have been fine. It's like, they talked and it's still not fine.
Yeah,
so
I like that too.
I really like that about that. But yeah, I do feel you. I think it can become a crutch. And I think here it was, I think they leaned a little too hard on it in this episode. The pacing
they
of this show.
They made us wait 7 episodes to find out about the whoopsie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they still didn't make enough clear in it. Like, they kind of treated it as like the big revelations, and it's like, we understand what happened to Meiosha now, but like the stuff about why they're special, you know, they talked about it in the episode, but I think that there are elements of it they needed to make a little clearer. Like, were they going to be sacrificed, and to what end? Like, those are stakes they didn't fully established to me. So yeah, the Acolyte has just remained kind of okay. I'm not hate watching it anymore. Like, I'm interested, but it's at no point blowing me away, aside from just Manny Jacinto, because he's been great. I loved seeing the main witch actress again, because she's really, really cool to see on screen. She does a great job. But yeah, there's one episode left.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be great. Not destined to be one of the great Star Wars series. Some good questions in the comments. Chris, we have seen the next episode of House of the Dragon, but we're not going to talk about it today because we don't want to get an HBO's bad side. Thanks for giving it to us, HBO. Thank you very much. But we'll talk about it next Sunday when it airs right here on the OneSpan YouTube channel and Facebook channel right after it's done. Come on over. We'll chat. Yes. I want to say really fast. Oh, do we ever have thoughts? And with the Battle of the Gullet happen, the jury truly is out. We don't know.
Yes.
And I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah. I wrote, Chris, if you're interested, Chris, I wrote a very long thing diving into whether we could see the Battle of the Gullet that is up on winteriscoming.net today, because I think it's possible, but it really could go either way. And I kind of love that they showed a lot of, you know, press people the first 4 episodes early, but it really does feel like no one has any idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's nice.
Aside from the sowing of the dragon seeds, we know that's happening.
Sure.
We've seen enough stuff about it. Someone asked about if we thought they were cutting nettles. I really hope not. I think they're just holding nettles back for season 3 like they are with Darren, but we really won't know until we see.
We'll see. Real fast, I've been watching Severance on Apple TV Plus, the sci-fi show I mentioned earlier about office workers who have their consciousnesses divided between their work lives and their home life. So when they're at home, they don't remember what they did at work. When they're at work, they remember they went home. Stupendous. Spooky, moody, builds very nicely throughout. Funny moments. Ben Stiller, of all people, is behind it. Also, I'll say this, now that I've finished the season, I have no idea how people have been holding out for like 2 years since that season 1 cliffhanger. That was a cliffhanger. Like, I want to know what happens now. I'm mad that I have to wait till January to find out what happens when the second season comes out. So I can't imagine how folk were been feeling all this time. Great show. If anybody wants to watch
You know what helps? You know what helps? If you've already been waiting for something, the Winds of Winter, for 11 years, the wait for Severance, you're okay to cope with it. It's a much smaller weight no matter what.
Apples and oranges, Dan. TV and books. One man writing a thing versus a production team of hundreds being paid millions of dollars to do it. Different things. And I'm mad about Winds of Winter too. I'm mad at more than one thing at once.
Yeah.
I think Chris said, or no, Sweeta said, can we describe the fifth episode in a word? And I would describe it as television.
Ooh, nice. God,
go.
What word would I?
HBO.
I'm going to describe it in two words.
Cheater.
The twins. And you can take that to mean whatever you want.
Will do. All right, Chris. Yes, everyone's is so good. All right, let's wrap this thing up with an edition of the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go through a bunch of news stories we didn't have time to cover in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them. Daniel Roman, are you ready?
I was born ready. Let's do it. Yeah. I'm psyched. 20 seconds or bust. Okay. Agatha All Along, that's the Agatha Harkness spinoff show, the Marvel show. It's premiering September 18th.
Yeah, this next Marvel show, Catherine Hahn, WandaVision spinoff. That's nice. I wonder if they are kind of burning off those shows that were kind of done in the great green lighting back under the last CEO. I'm sure it'll be good or not.
Great green
but
lighting.
I like Catherine Hahn. I like the song. Yeah. And maybe I'll watch. Beautiful.
That's legit. That one's got it's got a good cast going for it, but
yes, we'll see. Petalapone. All right, Daniel, you play the video games. I'm not sure if you played this one, but Netflix has reportedly canceled its planned live action adaptation of the popular video game Horizon Zero Dawn.
So I don't know the details of this one in particular about why Netflix might have canceled it. For sure, if they did, I don't know if we have official word. Oh, the showrunner. I don't think that's bad, honestly. I think if they rushed to make a Horizon show, it could have been awful. And I think the premise was kind of flawed and weird because it was like a prequel Horizon show. And I don't know, man.
I didn't know that.
It always sounded dicey to me in the first place.
Fair enough.
So, I got Resident Evil trauma flashbacks. So, here's a better one. Man, I was so unexcited for this movie until I saw the trailer because Ridley Scott gives no shits. Gladiator 2 dropped a trailer. It's coming out November 22nd.
Gladiator 2. I saw the original Gladiator with my father, but when it first came out, when I was like in middle school, and it was nice. It looks neat. It's a sword and sandal thing. It looked fun. Pedro Pascal, Joseph Quinn, Paul Mescal, Denzel Washington. Can they make a big sequel to an Oscar winning thing from 20 years ago? Something epic work? I don't know. We'll see.
I want to see that flooded Colosseum naval battle.
Me too. Why not? Daniel, this one was your rally. Rosamund Pike will return to narrate the fourth Wheel of Time audiobook, The Shadow Rising.
Yeah. Hell yeah, even. I mean, her narrations, I haven't listened to the full audiobooks of she did the first three already, but I loved what I've heard. You know, she puts on different voices for all the characters and stuff. It's Rosamund Pike. It's fantastic. The thing I think is extra curious about this is that it is coming out in September of next year, this audiobook. And I wonder if they're going to try to coordinate it with season 3's release somehow. Like at the end of season 3, they release it or something.
Right.
Because they did that for the third book. The Dragon Reborn came out just before season 2. So we'll see. Here's a fun one. Star Laz Alonso, that's Mother's Milk and The Boys. Mm-hmm. He wants The Boys to end with a movie.
It's a good excuse to talk because we've had some Boys comments in the chat, folks saying I'm not really feeling this season as much. I guess, I don't know. I felt like I've been enjoying it more or less the same as I always have. Maybe more. I like all the kind of the direct satire, and I can see I've seen the finals two episodes, and the season ends very strong. So I've been enjoying it. Don't want a movie. And I don't think anyone wants that except Les Alonso.
Yeah,
but I've been enjoying the new season. I'm sure people have been enjoying it. Oh, Daniel. Oh, wait, no. Okay, Daniel, this is a good one for you too. So Netflix is going to make a Witcher spinoff called The Rats, and they filmed part of it, and then they stopped for whatever reason, but it might be repurposed as a special episode, whatever that means.
Basically, they're going to release it as a 1-hour special instead of a full movie or a miniseries or anything. I've always thought this was folly. It was part of Netflix's plan to have a spinoff between every season of The Witcher. The Rats, of course, are the gang of thieves Ciri is going to hang out with next season. We saw her meet them in season 3. I like the idea of the Rats getting a special episode. They're interesting characters. I'd love to see more of them. But doing a whole spinoff was always a kind of a dumb idea, honestly. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Oh, this is a not fun one and a sensitive one. So I'm curious to hear your take on this, Dan. Your 20 seconds, deep 20 second take. So Neil Gaiman, the author of American Gods and a number of other books.
So much.
This came out last week that he has been accused of non-consensual sexual acts by two women, one in 2003 and another in 2022.
I put it that way because it's a fairly nuanced take. Like, both women have said we were in relationships with him, like, but within the relationships, the acts were non-consensual, and then he's denied it. He's saying
one was an employee.
I think one was like a maid or something. Yeah, and the one was like someone he met at a con. Neil Gaiman is, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than him in terms of this. So this is a big story, and we'll keep following it. All right. To end on a much happier note.
Bad story. Yes.
On a much happier note. Daniel, Shrek 5 is a thing. It's coming on July 1st, 2026.
Yeah. I won't lie. I haven't seen Shrek 4 or Shrek 3. So I have middling excitement at best, but I'm very happy for all the people whose lives have felt devoid of light and joy since they haven't seen a new Shrek movie in 14 years. We're getting another one. Mike Myers, Cameron Diaz, all the usual suspects, Eddie Murphy, they're all coming back for it. So mark your calendars now, July 1st, 2026.
Shrek 5, here we go again, Mamma Mia. Yeah, that could be cute. And that's our show. We meet here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. We also meet every Sunday after each episode of House of the Dragon to break it all down in detail. Right here in the Winners Coming YouTube channel, Winners Coming Facebook channel. Also, here's a tip. We're available in podcast form, so download us. Why not? Nice. Listen to us at the gym, on your car ride, wherever podcasts are available, be it Google Play, Apple Music, whatever. Wherever you can find podcasts, we're there. Hope you enjoy us.
Spotify.
Spotify. And you know what? As a way of sign-off, as a reward for those who have stuck around all this time, I will give a more substantive answer to the question of... describe House of the Dragon episode 5 in one word.
Oh, nice.
And my one word for it will be talking.
Nice.
Bye.
Take care, y'all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.